Good morning. We're glad you're here this morning. Thanks for hanging out with us at Genesis. That last clip kind of fits with this morning, Dumb and Dumber the movie. Just got to laugh at that on that little moped. Before we kind of hit the ground running, I got a couple things I just want to share with you. First of all, we got a little card that's available this morning that goes with an idea. It's in your worship folder. We are always, as a church, trying to find ways that we, as people, can live the mission of God in our culture and just find creative ways just to say, you know, we care about people and we want to make a difference in the lives of people, and we're just here. And so we want to make things that really easy for people, for you guys, to do that. And so we created this card that is designed for this week. All right, and here's the idea. Either with maybe your community group, or if you don't have a community group, just for you at Halloween, you know, all the kids are going to show up and they're going to want candy, and all the parents are going to be standing out in the driveway just waiting. But it would be cool maybe if you had something for them too. And so our idea is that you go buy, you know, maybe, a dozen or more 9-volt batteries and have those. And then we've got this card, and what the card says is, this battery is a gift from your friends at Genesis Church, reminding you to reset your clocks and replace your batteries and your smoke detectors. It's just a real simple, easy way where you can take a few of these, throw them in Ziploc bags with a battery, and just hand them to adults, or go visit door to door, like just go to your neighbors and, you know, you could knock on their door and just hand them one of these with a battery or something like that. So just a simple idea. We're always trying to find really creative, simple ways for people just to, like I said, live their faith and make a difference, live for the betterment of the neighborhood or the community of Eureka. The other thing is, we had a great time with our men, a group of men yesterday. We had our first men's breakfast. Make sure you check the worship folder about that. It really went well. We had a wonderful discussion. As a church, I am really passionate, or as a leader here at Genesis, I am really passionate that, first of all, church ought to be a place where men feel good about going. And so we want to make this give it a feel where it's comfortable. We want to talk about guy things, and this is not to exclude women. It's just kind of in the culture of church, what's happened is that in a lot of places, for some reason, men don't feel like they connect. And it's important that we are helping men, you know, develop themselves as leaders, both of them, of themselves, of their family, in the church, in the culture. And so we're just kind of getting together with guys on Saturday mornings for breakfast. See that in your worship folder. We'd love to have you hang out with us and join us for that. This morning, we're going to talk about what it means to be a fool. Now, that's like one of those words where you just throw it out and everybody gets kind of the cold sweats. You're already like, hey, wait a minute. That is so culturally insensitive. We don't call anybody fools anymore. We call them, that they are, something challenged. What's that? Educationally challenged. There you go. That just seems harsh. But the funny thing is that the Bible throws that word around just all the time. In fact, it's kind of like, it's one of these black and white words in the Bible. Either you're a wise person or you're a fool. And nobody likes to be labeled a fool. And so this morning, pretty much what I'm going to tell you is, hey, you know, somewhere in this list you fit, and the Bible's talking about you. But it talks about me too, so be uncomfortable with this, but be challenged by what both Solomon and Ecclesiastes and really the whole Bible does as it looks at this issue of foolishness, because it's, you know, not as big a far cry as it seems like for us to end up like the guys in Dumb and Dumber in areas of our life. A movie that has always kind of spoken to me is a movie, Forrest Gump. And the famous line in Forrest Gump, stupid is as stupid does. That's kind of what we're getting at this morning, that we have areas in our life that it just, man, when the dust settles, it seems like our lives just don't fit with kind of what we've said we're going to be. They're just areas that we all tend up following paths of foolishness, all right? So just kind of to prime the pump, to get us thinking about this, we've got a clip this morning from that movie. I just want you to watch this, all right? Jenny and Me was like peas and carrots. I don't know if you've seen that movie. It's a movie that has some great themes of redemption. In fact, I'm convinced, and I'm going to come back to this a little bit later, the movie's actually not about Forrest Gump. It's about Jenny and her redemption, where she finds that from. And there's a great gospel theme in there, which we're going to kind of deal with. But that line, stupid is as stupid does. This is what Solomon wants us to see as we're looking into Ecclesiastes this morning, that there are areas of our life that we have these tendencies to kind of be, to miss the boat. And you know, what Solomon's been trying to do, the book of Ecclesiastes is a great book. It's a book of philosophy where Solomon is like exploring the value and meaning in life. He's saying, you know, what really makes life work? How can life have meaning? And his conclusions have been that if you just look at life under the sun, life on this planet, if we're just going to look at what's going on here, we're going to try to make sense of life with the stuff on this planet. His conclusion is, man, it's vain. It's a vapor. It's like a puff of wind. Really, when the dust settles, there is nothing here that will give you ultimate value. The reason he can say that is because he's tried everything and been all pro at it. I mean, you know, we try money. He had mounds. We try pleasure, thinking, man, if I just could have a woman or have a guy and you know, just have my way for a while, life would work. And he's like, listen, I have 1,000 women. We say, if I could just have power in my life over, you know, I feel powerless in my life because my boss is always telling me what to do, and I get home and I have no power in my life. And Solomon says, listen, I have absolute power. None of it works. And so what he's been doing is he's been helping us get on a journey, this journey that takes us to the place of pursuing the only thing that will give us meaning and value in life, and that is the pursuit of Christ. But as we pursue, as we follow this path, the last several messages, the last several couple chapters have been, Solomon's kind of been saying, listen, on this journey, This highway that is this life, this pursuit that is a journey towards being all that God has called us to be, there are places on this journey that we get pulled off, that there's exits, there's you know, amusement parks, there's things that we can get off base, and all of a sudden we were on a journey to Disney World and we never made it there. We were on a journey to some place. We don't get there, and why don't we get there? Because it's not that we don't really know where we're going, it's just that, man, there was a billboard and it just pulled us off the highway. And next thing you know, we look around and we are not on the same road anymore. We've kind of lost our way. There's been a lot of things we've talked about, but in this section, Solomon kind of takes us to this idea of foolishness. This is kind of a different feel for this idea in that what Solomon's trying to show us is that we all have these issues in our lives that are kind of subtle, that will pull us away from this journey. And we'll almost get us to the point where we totally forgot where we were going. Like, you know, one day I'm living my life and there's a sense of purpose and value and meaning. I'm connected to God. I feel close to God. I feel like my spiritual life is working. It seems like things in my family are going pretty good. It seems like things at my job are going pretty good. I'm even dealing with the hardship of life that, you know, things, it's a broken world, and I realize that, but even in the midst of brokenness, I feel a sense of peace and meaning. And then all of a sudden, there's these little things in our lives that pop up, and they're just part of our character. We don't see them as character flaws. We don't see them as big issues, but all of a sudden, we've pursued this, and 2 months later, our lives have totally abandoned everything that was part of the journey we were on. And here's the deal. In a room this size, 50 or 60 people in here, it could be 50 or 60 different issues, but all of us end up to the point where we become functional atheists in an area of our life, and that's the key, all right? I want to show you what the Bible, how the Bible says, what it says about somebody who's a fool. So, in Psalm chapter 14, verse 1, look at this. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They do abominable deeds, and there is no one who does good. He says, listen, who's a fool? The fool is a person who says in his heart, there is no God. Now, it's easy for us to say, well, listen, I'm a Christian, or I believe in God. That's not me. But here's what happens. This is my life, okay? Maybe this resonates with you, but this is my life. There, you know, while I am somebody who has a very strong belief in God in my life, there are segments of my life where I live like a functional atheist, meaning there are places in my life where even though I would acknowledge God is real, it's almost like I got to put an umbrella so he can't see what I'm doing. Now, that's not true. He does, but I live my life in a way where there are certain areas where I just kind of, at moments, at times, just kind of deny his existence in terms of it shaping who I am. And what the Bible's going to teach us is that any point in my life where I do that, at any point in my life where I have an area of functional atheism, it is that area of my life that I have this tendency to pursue foolishness. And there are stories. I mean, you know, you and I could sit around over a cup of coffee and talk about people that we know, stories in the newspaper, our own life experiences, where people lived out of this functional atheism, this just little area of life where the way they lived, what they did, kind of denied the existence of God. And either that moment of functional foolishness or that little bit spiraling out of control led to incredible hardship in life. So you have people who, man, just one time they're on a trip away from their wife and family, and just one time they have this foolish moment where they end up with a prostitute and they get AIDS. Just one time that they gossip and it just totally divides friends and churches. Just one time they go into a casino and they lose their mind. And next thing you know, it's rolled out of control to where they have this massive addiction. And what Solomon wants us to do, he does not want us to read Proverbs, this literature that points out foolishness and wisdom, and go, yeah, let me think about that guy. Yeah, there's that one guy who's like this. Oh, yeah, this verse makes me think about this one girl. Yeah, I remember her. This verse helps me think about that person I went to in college. What Solomon wants us to do is read these and go, there I am. Stink. There I am again. The Bible keeps calling me a fool. I don't like this. I'm really unhappy with the Bible. It is politically incorrect to keep calling me a fool. I'm not real happy with it. But that's what the Bible wants us to do. It wants us to find ourselves in these verses and go, yeah, I got to be real honest. There I am. There are places in my life where even though I have this strong belief in God, I live in little segments of my life like a functional atheist. I really deny that he's there, he's integrated, he's part of who I am. I try to shelter a little area of my life and call it my own. I won't listen to anybody, what anybody else has to say about that. I'm just going to protect this little area of my life and keep it for myself. Functional atheism. And this is what the writer of Proverbs says. In Proverbs chapter 12, he says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. He's saying, listen, here's what a fool is. A fool is a functional atheist who says, nobody is going to tell me I can't do this. Nobody is going to tell me that I can't live my life the way I want to. And listen, I'm being honest. I dealt with this all week. I have areas of my life where I function on this level. I have areas of my life where it's very real, and I struggle with these areas of life where there is a level of functional atheism, a level of allowing a little bit of foolishness in my life. And what Solomon is going to point out here and throughout the Bible as he writes is, listen, just a little bit of that can wreck the journey to where we don't even know where we are, where we're going anymore, all right? And so in Ecclesiastes, this is kind of, we're on this highway, we're on this journey, we're pursuing God, but the question for you is, where's your functional atheism? Where is it that you hide from God, do the things that are just kind of your own private deal, and nobody's going to tell you, listen, you shouldn't be doing that? Where are the areas where you will tend? Now, I've given you a sheet this morning. Title of the sheet, Everybody Plays a Fool, and it's like totally freaked everybody here out because nobody can remember who sang that song. So help me out. Does anybody know who sang that song? The OJs. Is that, see, if it's coming from you, it's right. The OJs. All right, there you go. Carla, where are you at? The main ingredient. Do you feel better now? The main ingredient on the internet? He'll know. Trust me. All right. Anyway, we had like I picked a title, like Everybody Plays Fool, because you had a song pop in my head. I had no idea who it was. And for 20 minutes before the service, people were running around like, okay, we got to know who sang this song. It's driving us all crazy now. So, and I don't think we solved it, but I would trust there. All right. Anyway, Everybody Plays Fool. But what I want to do is I just want to show you in Scripture all these issues where the Scriptures lay out these areas of functional atheism, these areas where people will tend to hide a little area of their life and become a fool. And what we want to do this morning, we want to see in Ecclesiastes how Solomon deals with this. And then my goal is at the end this morning to kind of get to the end of my message and say, okay, what do we do with this? Because as we walk through these Proverbs in Ecclesiastes 10, and as I read the book of Proverbs, the problem is not that I keep seeing everybody else. The problem is that eventually I will find myself over and over and over again in these passages, and it will become frustrating. I will throw up my hands and go, okay, so what do I do about this? And that's my goal, is to say, okay, what do we do about this? By the way, this passage, Ecclesiastes 10, is a form of literature, I've kind of thrown it out a couple times, called a proverb. They are wise, they're like short, pithy sayings that impart wisdom, that show us the difference between living as a fool and living as someone who's wise. So if a fool is a place who is living as a functional atheist, somebody who is denying God in an area of their life, wisdom is a person who takes a step above and begins to have God's perspective. It's a person who begins to see life from God's point of view and then begins to integrate that into life. It's somebody who has arisen above the sun, above the things that are here, and is now seeing life through the lenses, through the eyes of God. But it's not just now I know. Now it's somebody who starts integrating that wisdom, those things into their life, and it starts functioning in their lives. And what Solomon says, Ecclesiastes 10:1, if you have your Bibles, flip over there. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 1. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to grab one of those. If you're at the end, kind of pass them down so everybody has a Bible and you can read along with us, because we're going to read this whole chapter this morning. There's a lot of verses here, but we're going to look at the areas that Solomon points out here where people tend to be foolish. They tend to have folly. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 1. In those Bibles, on page 473. All right? And this is what he starts with. He says, dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. It's kind of funny. A lot of times in the Proverbs, Solomon is pretty humorous. I mean, here he says, ladies, you walk up to JCPenney, you know, the counter, and at the counter, they have this big old fat bottle of, you know, some really expensive, cool perfume. And you walk up, you're like, ooh, I really like that. You got the big old giant bottle of it. I just want to spray a little bit of that on me to kind of smell good and feel all womanly. And you know, and then you look at the guy's version, you're like, ooh, they even make a guy's version. I can take this home to my husband, and the husband will never wear it because guys don't like that stuff. But anyway, but you see this big old giant jar, and just about the time where they're going to start squeezing that little ball that, you know, squirts the stuff all over, you look down, there's three dead flies floating in the top of that perfume. How many of you are going to go, ah, it doesn't matter, squirt it on me anyway? You know, it's just three little dead flies. I mean, seriously, that's the whole thing of perfume, three little dead flies. No woman in her right mind is going, yeah, just put that here, a little here, you know, make me smell good. They're all like, ugh, you got to deal with that. Get rid of those flies. This is what he says, you know, like a couple dead flies in this perfume is a person who integrates just a little bit of functional atheism, a little bit of folly. When we were in California, Missouri, I have to include Missouri there because people outside, we lived in California. People look at me and go, you lived in California? And I have to drop my head and go, no, California, Missouri. Nobody really wants to admit they spent time there. But it's this little small town in central Missouri. But when we lived there, we had this house. And, it, you know, like any, you know, this was kind of our first house as a couple. We'd lived there for a couple months. And, you know, one of my areas of folly is the area of food. You see, one of my problems is that I wear my struggle right out there for everybody to see. You know, some of you can hide it. Mine is hanging right above my belt buckle, and, you know, the smell of food is a beautiful thing. You know, I walked in, we had Mexican yesterday, and I walked in my house, it smelled like Mexican food. I was like, oh, that is beautiful. That is of God. And Thanksgiving is glorious because, man, all these wonderful smells. And, you know, I really believe heaven is going to smell like a Krispy Kreme donut place. There's just something beautiful about the smell of food. And so we were living in this house in California, Missouri, and we started turning on the oven to cook our food, and something hideous started taking place. The cooking of food started smelling disgusting. And believe me, it was not my wife. It wasn't that she was, you know, really messing the food up. You get it on the table. But even when something reeks that bad, your taste buds even kind of get messed up. We would have to take food out on the deck. I mean, we'd start cooking, and it would just stink to high heaven, and we could not figure out what it was. It was horrible. And so one day, we started tearing into the oven, and nothing. We'd lifted the top, couldn't figure anything out. We could not figure out what was causing it. But we started realizing every time we turned this oven in our house on, that smell would come. We kind of got to the point where we just wouldn't cook. I mean, we'd make ramen noodles or, you know, macaroni and cheese. Anyway, we lived off that for the first 5 years of our marriage anyway. But some of you are like, yeah, been there. Experienced that. Ramen noodles, macaroni and cheese, diet, you know. But we kind of got to the point where we didn't even want to cook. It was so bad. And so finally we said, listen, we have got to figure this out. And so we started, you know, my wife is, you know, she's just all into tools, and she started pulling her tools out and her screwdrivers, and we just started tearing into this stove. We took the top off, we took the sides off, and we found all this insulation. We started pulling the insulation, and burrowed down in the insulation on the inside of a stove was a mouse that had crawled in there, got stuck, and it was charred. It was a deeply barbecued mouse. Did I hear somebody go, oh, seriously? It was a mouse. It was nasty. And, you know, pulled out, it was all crispy, it was black. And we had, you know, we barbecued it several times as we were cooking dinner. And it ruined everything. That little bitty mouse made everything we cooked stink. Now, here's what Solomon's saying. This is the whole chapter, okay? Everything else we're going to read flows from this. Life is wonderful. I'm on this journey. I'm pursuing God. I feel like I have a sense of connectedness to God. But there's this one little area of functional atheism, this one little area of my life that I deny the existence of God, and I live for myself. And I'm like, God, I'll give you everything, but over here, this is me. And I allow that to filter into my life, and it's that thing that will work out in my life that will lead me to foolishness and that little bit of folly. Is like a mouse in a stove. It's like a couple of flies that are in perfume. Over time, it's really gonna make it all stink. And so this is what he says. So it will outweigh wisdom and honor just a little bit. And what happens, what Solomon's trying to communicate to us is that we're on this journey. Life is a highway. Man, I'm on this journey. But there's these little things in life that will be like flat tires, it will be like broken down car, where it just messes things up. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to deal with it, and I completely forgot where I was going. Completely forgot. I was like, all right, I was on this highway, don't remember where it was headed. Because I get pulled off into this area where I live as a functional atheist. Here's my deal. This is what I want you to understand. Every time, if you read the book of Proverbs, this is the framework. As we read Ecclesiastes chapter 10, this is the framework. It's asking me, where are the areas of my life where I live as kind of a functional atheist? And what do I do with that, all right? And so what we want to do is we want to walk through this. And what happens is that the text is going to point out to us and other places in Scripture, what is a fool? And a fool is this. It's a person who at any moment denies the reality of God in life and chooses to listen to his own reason or folly in making decisions. Any point where that's you, that's the point where you are, by the Bible's definition, living as a fool. And Solomon says, listen, one little area of foolishness is going to get me off the road and help me disconnect. So I've got to figure out where those areas are and allow God to deal with those in my life. And as the Proverbs, this passage, other places, it helps us to start see foolishness on different levels. It helps me to start see foolishness, first of all, in my own life, in myself. I begin to read the Bible, and I begin to listen to people talk about this, and all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, there's an area for me. Yeah, there's an area. I don't struggle with those three things, but there's another area. And all of a sudden you begin to see foolishness in your own life. But also, the challenge of the Proverbs, the challenge of this passage is that I begin to also notice it in the people I hang out with. And I begin to understand that my friends and my peer relationships, I begin to see the foolishness in their lives, not for me to fix it. I begin to see how I'm hanging out with people who are, you know, let's be honest, total imbeciles, and I'm totally getting sucked in with them. A lot of Proverbs deal with the type of people that I associate with on a heavy level because we were sitting around it yesterday and Andy reminded us of a quote, and I forget who said it, but a quote that you are who your friends are. And all of a sudden I've got all these relationships and I start seeing these tendencies in my life that every time I'm with this one person, this is what takes place in my life. And I go, that's a point of tension. I need to figure out what that means. And also, the Proverbs are going to help us see foolishness in the culture as a whole. That I live in a place where everybody really is a fool. Or everybody plays a fool. Everybody's really like that. And one of the Proverbs, I mean, I just love the way the Proverbs kind of lay out. It's a reminder that, listen, a fool is a person who is like a dog who returns to his own vomit. You know, you just never really learn. I never really get it. I just keep coming back to the same mess over and over and over again. And somehow the gospel has to apply to my life in the areas where I'm a functional atheist. All right, I hope I've not just blown right over top of your heads, but this is what we're talking about. Where are these areas for you? And how do you deal with them? All right, so let's look at, what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna read all of chapter 10 and just kind of bullet point. I mean, you'll get the idea as I kind of share with these different areas that Solomon points out in this passage. But this is also why I gave you that sheet, because Solomon doesn't have enough time in chapter 10 to cover it all. But the Proverbs, you know, there's a lot more examples, a lot more issues where foolishness is pointed out to us. What does it mean? So chapter 10, verse 1, where I said chapter 2, I got to be honest with you. If I was, really involved in politics and was a Republican, chapter 2 would be like on my platform, where it says, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Hey, it's in the Bible. It's not what Solomon's going for. It's the image of two paths. And there's one is a path that's righteousness. It's right. One is a path. Any right or left are just random, okay? But it's the issue. You can see these paths. And he says, listen, a person who's foolish, they're just like, hey, I want this road. I'm down it all the time. A person who's wise is doing a better job of examining which way they go. Now, the big question is why? Is it something special in the wise man that causes him to have a desire to go down the right path? And the answer is no. What causes a wise person to do that? And the answer is the presence of God that draws them. You and I are never going to choose right on our own. You understand that? We will not ever choose right on our own. The only way I can choose the proper road, the proper path, is when when God himself enters into the equation with me and pulls me and I respond to what he's doing in my life. And so he says, listen, the foolish guy, he's just always going down this path, but there is something going on in the heart of the wise man that causes him to stop and take a look at this and go, I really need to let my life go this way. Verse 3, even when the fool walks the road, he lacks sense. And he says to everyone, he is a fool. I mean, we all know this guy, right? I mean, he's just walking down the street, and you're like, that guy there is a total idiot. I mean, he doesn't even have to say anything. He's just walking, and you're like, yep, there he is. There's something about functional atheism in our life that we think it's subtle. We think nobody can see it, but the truth of the matter, it shouts where everybody knows it's going on. I mean, you know, I can't tell you the number of times I've been in churches with people who just put on this holy aura, but they were the worst gossip in the whole church, and everybody knew it. And they thought they were, you know, they'd say, all right, I want to share with you a prayer need. And usually that was a sign of, I really don't want to pray for what you're about to talk to me about because you got something juicy and I'm going to jump into this sinful behavior in the name of prayer. But, you know, even if, you know, a fool's just walking down the street, going about their life, they think nobody notices, and everybody's like, hey, that's you. You know, this person is a goober. You know, they're a fool. It just shows up in their lives. Verse 4, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. By the way, just let me unpack this. These are just random sayings. So you're like, wait, how does that connect to the verse before? Often Proverbs don't. They're just kind of a list of places where this functional atheism shows up. And here's what he's saying. Here's where functional atheism shows up for some people in the way they deal with authorities in their life. Maybe this is you. This is an area where I struggle. If I have somebody over me and I don't like the way they're leading, I don't like what they're doing, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to tell them that I'm the guy who has all the right ideas, and I don't deal with authority well in my life. He's saying, listen, if that's you, if you have not figured out that when somebody who's in authority, when the king, the government, somebody in authority over you has some anger with you, that you need to sit back, reevaluate life, calm down, sit down, drink a latte, and cool off, you're going to end up with an area where you totally deny the existence of God in a relationship. It's going to show up. Everybody's going to know who you are, and then the king's going to get you. And, you know, your boss is going to fire you. You're going to end up, you know, at the end of the day doing something really stupid. That's not the way God intends for us to respond. All right, verses 5 through 7. Verses 5 through 7, he says, there's an evil that I've seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set up in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I have seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. What he's saying is that foolishness shows up in a society when it is obvious that the values that will build society are upside down. When the hardworking, diligent, passionate people who have some ingenuity are all of a sudden called evil, and the lazy bum who's on a corner with a, you know, a bottle of vodka in a bag is the guy that everybody goes, that's the good guy in our culture. When values that are helpful and good for a society are totally debased, and values in a society that are signs of foolishness are exalted. And our culture is full of this, where things that ought to be valued are totally ignored. And things that ought to be just despised are exalted and put up on pedestals. And, you know, we pursue this in the name of diversity, in the name of everybody getting along, and, you know, lifestyles that are exalted in our culture, you know, ought to make us go, wait a minute. There is a disconnect here. There is a problem with the way people are functioning with God when our culture values this. You know, and I give you all kinds of examples, but you get what he's saying here. He's saying, man, that is a sign of foolishness, of folly. And when I don't stop and evaluate my culture and have an honesty about the fact that I live in a foolish culture, I get sucked into it, and I start having the same argument that everybody else has. Instead of stopping and going, wait a minute, how do I see this through the eyes of God? How do I look at my culture and the values of my culture through his purpose, his eyes, his ideas? And the Proverbs want us to see that. Want to see, man, sometimes what the world values, what the culture values is totally upside down from what God values. But man, it's so easy to watch TV shows. People are really articulate and they're good and they express these ideas so well, and they bring in Harvard business people, or they bring in people with 14 doctorate degrees. And man, it sounds right, but the culture has values that are topsy-turvy, upside down. Verses 12 through 15, or verses 8 through 11, he kind of changes again. He says, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. Some of you ladies are like, I'm never going near a wall again, if that could happen. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. If the serpent bites before it is charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. Here's what all these people have in common. They are engaged in something that is just part of their everyday life. But what has happened is that they have stopped giving deep care and concern about how they manage their affairs. And the next thing you know, a guy whose job is to dig a pit falls into the pit. How'd he get there? He didn't. One little point in life, he didn't have discretion. Just one little point. It's back to this first verse again. There's this one little point where he did not have wisdom, and now he's in the pit that he dug. This guy who, you know, he tears down walls, and usually he's careful and he takes time, but one day, man, he just doesn't stop to think, and boom, and now he's got a snake that's wrapped around his wrist. This guy who normally is really good at cutting logs, one day, I mean, I had this happen one time. I was with my dad. We were cutting down this tree, and my dad, like, I was young and stupid. I'd never done anything like this before. He just told me, go hold the rope, and, like, he tied this rope way up in the tree, and I was supposed to pull it, and I'm pulling, but he cut the thing at the wrong angle, totally took out this guy's fence from one end to the other, you know? I'm like, Dad, did you not think about this? He was like, no, I just started cutting, you know. Might be a different way to do this. You know, this tree about pulled me off the ground as I'm trying to yank it in a different direction. It just a moment of not thinking. It can happen that fast, and boom. This guy who is a woodcutter, all of a sudden he's working so hard, but he's not. The trees aren't falling, and he doesn't think, hey, I need to go sharpen my axe. This guy who, you know, I love the last one. He's a snake charmer. I mean, I just love how they bring that. He's got this cobra that he puts in a thing and he pulls it out. He's playing this flute. You know. But this one day, before he can get it in the basket, he just grabs the snake and the snake gets him. And here's the point of all these. It's that if I don't walk through life really examining my life and seeking the wisdom of God, we all have points where we're going to grab the snake, we're going to fall in the hole. It happens so fast. And life gets messed up so quickly. And I just need to be aware that this is part of the reality of my existence. And so foolishness will lead me to being in the pit, being in those just before I can even think. So it's important to seek wisdom, all right? Let's go on, verse 12. I keep getting ahead of myself. Verse 12 to 15. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favor. That's good. You know, a person who's wise, the things that he says usually keep him out of trouble, have people think well of him. But the lips of a fool consume him. And here's what I like, all right? In the original, it literally, the way it reads, it says, the lips of a fool swallow him. So it's like this guy's, you got this image of this guy who's just talking, bloop, 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 and he's always got something to say, but you listen to him, you're just like, all right, dude, seriously, you may want to think before you talk. Because every time you talk, and it's this image, I hear his lips, all of a sudden they turn and just consume, they swallow him. That's the imagery here. It's just cool. Anyway, it says the lips of a fool consume him. Verse 13, the beginning of the words in his mouth are foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him? Now, I could spend the next 20 minutes just talking to you about the different ways that we all end up with our mouths writing checks that we can't cash. You know, we all have a tendency, a place where we will lie and a reason we will lie. In fact, if you want to figure out what your idols are in your life, find out where it is you lie and why. Do you lie so that people will like you? Are you the type of person that you actually lie because you don't want other people to be offended? Do you lie to make yourself look good? Do you lie to get your way? I mean, we all have a place where we will have a tendency to just bend the truth to accomplish something. What is that in your life? It'll kind of show you what you really value, what you tend to worship, an area of functional atheism. We, you know, some of us have loud, obnoxious mouths. We're the loudest person in a room. Some of us, the way our lips consume us is that we just decide to go silent and never talk about anything. And so, guys, this is us often. Our wife wants to know what's going on inside, and she can't get anything more than just a one-word answer out of us. How you doing? Fine. How's your day? Fine. How's dinner? Fine. Hey, you know, this is who we are. And what Solomon's saying is, listen, our lips, what comes out of our mouths, often demonstrates the area that we are functional atheists, the areas that we tend to be foolish, all right? Verse 16, he says, "Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is a son of nobility, and your princes feast at the proper time." Here's what he's saying. He's saying a land or a culture is in total trouble when the people who set the culture are young, inexperienced, and stupid. Can you say Justin Timberlake? Can you say Britney Spears? Can you say Paris Hilton? We live in this culture where everything about our culture is being set by people who, he goes on to say, their princes are up at the crack of dawn and they're already partying. They go to bed at midnight drunk and they wake up with a bottle of beer or drugs and a bunch of people around them, and their whole life is defined by the party. When those people are the ones setting culture, who are driving the culture, that culture is in trouble. That culture is going to be foolish. And it's like, even in my own life, having conversations with people about being aware of the cultural icons. And here people just go, it's no big deal. We need to be aware of the people who are setting the trends in our culture and realizing that in our culture, we are just like this. The people who set the trends in our culture are, based on the Bible, young, foolish. He says, listen, when the king is a person of nobility who has a background, who has some wisdom, that's good. That's not our culture right now. Pop culture drives everything. And it's not saying that we sit here in a church and go, oh, it's all bad. We need to be aware that it is foolish. And we need to figure out, how is it that I get sucked into the cultural foolishness that is around me? Need to be aware of that, all right? Last couple things, and then we're going to kind of pull this and figure out what to do with that, all right? Verse 18, through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. I mean, that's kind of straightforward. Here's a guy who lives in a house where, you know, all of a sudden he's got dripping, and he won't get up, you know, from sitting in his easy chair playing video games or watching ESPN to do anything other than put a coffee can underneath it. And all of a sudden, he's got another leak in a roof, and instead of doing anything about it, you know, he's sitting there with, you know, with a big old giant, you know, 52-ounce soda and a bag of Doritos, and he doesn't have another coffee can, so he empties the Doritos on the floor and throws the bag underneath the water. And you say, man, what's going to eventually happen to somebody who's just a lazy bum is that the roof's going to cave in. I mean, it's just pretty straightforward, pretty honest. Listen, is sloth, is laziness your place of functional atheism? Do you tend just, you know, Sunday morning, the alarm clock rings, and it is easier to stay in bed than to go do business with God? Saturday night, when you really ought to hang out with your wife and go have a date night, is it easier just to flip on the football game and sit and watch a screen? Tuesday night, when you have an exam on Friday, is it easier just to put it off until Thursday night and then realize Thursday night I have too much to do, there's no way, and so just go, I'm okay with the C. The roof caves in. A lot of us, that this is where we live, all right? Verse 19, bread is made for laughter, wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. There's another one of those things that people are like, yes, I want that as a life verse. I want to put that, you know, it's in the Bible. Bread makes you laugh, wine makes you happy, and money will answer everything. Context, what Solomon's saying is, listen, life is something to be lived in balance. God gave us these things for enjoyment, but when they become the central thing, I begin to function as if wine, bread, they are my gods, all right? And the last thing he says here is, even in your thought, do not curse the king, nor in the bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature will tell the matter. I mean, you're just hanging out, having a private conversation about that person you know. Next thing that person comes and says, what are you doing talking about me? And you're like, talking about you? I didn't say anything about you. Really? Well, how did you find out? Doesn't matter. Some bird told me. I mean, that's what Solomon's saying. This is the way gossip works. Be careful that you don't even think those things about people, because somehow they will know what you're thinking and what you feel. All right? Now, here's the point. All these passages, I've kind of walked through a lot of Proverbs. Here's the deal. Where are you in here? There's probably some things you're like, that didn't connect to me. But there may be some other things you're like, yeah, I resolve with that. And as I broaden it and I show you that sheet of paper, you start looking through that of all the places where the Bible says a person who does this is a fool. I found myself on there often. If you don't, God bless you. Way to go. High five. But most of us are going to go, yeah, there's some areas where I live as a functional atheist. What do you do? And this is what I want to do. I want to take this chapter and just for a few minutes, I want to broaden it and say, okay, what are chapters like this in the Bible? What is the book of Proverbs? What is supposed to happen as I deal with my own foolishness in life? So I just want to give you four thoughts about how do you deal with seeing yourself clearly in the Proverbs. How do I deal with the areas where I literally am a fool, a functional atheist? And the first thing is this, believe the gospel. Believe the gospel. Now here's the tendency. I will read a verse on sloth and realize that I really love my easy chair, and I will say, okay, I'm going to do better. I am going to self-reform. I am going to work harder. And what goes on is I figure out, all right, here's where I'm being kind of a fool. I'm going to work better and be a better person. But the problem is that is actually another form of functional atheism. If I am the solution to my own problem, I am not understanding what the Bible is all about. And so what the Bible does is it keeps showing me these areas of life where I'm just really broken and messed up. But here's the answer to those issues. The answer is not that I get better. The answer is not self-reform. The answer is not that I sit down and I write a list of the 15 ways that I tend to be a fool and then set out a game plan so I can be better at it. And it's not the answer for a couple of reasons. First of all, because it doesn't work. My life is diet after diet after diet. You feel my pain. Some of you, your whole life is throwing a pack of cigarettes out the window and driving back and picking them up because you don't have enough money to buy the next pack. The whole self-reform thing, what we will do is if we look at these verses and go, okay, it says here no more gossip, we will go, I'm not going to gossip as soon as I let somebody know about this one story. I'm not going to slander that one person needs to hear what I got to say. And we approach self-reform, and the answer in the Bible is the gospel. So what is the gospel? This is where we come back to the story of Forrest Gump. And you need to hear this and see this. This is it. The story of Forrest Gump is not about Forrest Gump. If you're familiar with the story, it's about a guy who has some learning disabilities. There's a politically correct way to say it. Some learning disabilities. But he just ends up in all these crazy events in life. But you saw where he met this girl named Jenny. He meets this girl named Jenny, and this girl named Jenny is from a home where her dad sexually abuses her, beats her, destroys her life. She runs away from that, and her life is just one failure, one picture of foolishness after another. Her whole life is making... You could just categorize Jenny's life in the story as this. At every point in life, she makes the wrong decision. She lives as a functional atheist. She makes the wrong decision. But this is what goes on all through the movie, is that this simple guy, Forrest Gump, just loves her. And there is this pursuing love in this character that is Forrest Gump that just keeps showing up in her life and keeps reminding her that, listen, there is something better than what you are. There is something better than what you're doing. And the entire movie is about this pursuing love of Forrest Gump in the life of this girl, Jenny. There's even a place in the movie where she abuses that love just to gratify her own desires. But the end of the movie is her redemption, is that pursuing love that just keeps reaching into her life, keeps telling her that he loves her, doesn't matter what's happened, he just loves her. I mean, he names his boat after her in the movie. If you've ever been to Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, the name of the boat is the Jenny. And this pursuing love at the end of the movie, when she finds out she has AIDS and is dying, brings her back to value and meaning. This is the gospel, that when I am a fool, Jesus reaches into my life through the cross of Jesus Christ and invites me to know him and experience him. The answer to my foolishness is not self-reform. It is the goodness of God and his love that draws me away from my atheism to himself. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, he says it like this. The word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Somebody who's living as a fool will go, that's just stupid. I don't believe in that. But to those who know Jesus, they look at the cross and all of a sudden, it is the love that is displayed on the cross that just keeps pulling us. This is the message of this chapter. This is the message of the Bible. It's not that I see myself and go, wow, I have got to get better. It's that I see myself and I realize at the same time, first of all, I am worse than I ever could have imagined, and God accepts me more than I ever could have hoped. And at the same time, I am a fool and I am loved in spite of that. And wisdom is when I begin to see life through those lenses. At the same time, realize I have this crazy foolishness in me, but grace draws me. And so the other things, I'm going to hit them because they're probably in your worship folder. But the deal is this, believe the gospel. If you're here this morning and you're just trying to figure out what that means, what it means to follow Jesus, that's the message. That I have places where I live as a functional atheist and I cannot improve myself, but Christ died for me. And his love draws me, and it is the power of God in my life to be something I can't be on my own. If you're here today and you are a follower of Jesus, the answer to your foolishness is the gospel, the forgiveness and love of God that draws you. It is the answer to my foolishness, to my little places where I am a closet atheist in little areas of my life. It is the gospel that draws me, all right? And that's kind of the message. There's a couple other things, and I'll just hit them because they're in your list. First, second thing is I want to encourage you to spend time in the scriptures. How do I work these areas of foolishness out of my life? I need to be in the Bible. I need to let the Bible work like a mirror so it just keeps showing me what I really am like, okay? And if you're not spending time reading and studying the Bible, you're going to struggle to really understand your own foolishness. The third thing is that I need to know my own foolishness. I need to be real honest about the places where this is part of my life. And all of us have areas where we are foolish. Be honest about those. Let you know, just have integrity with yourself and with God to say, listen, this is real. And if there's areas where I really need God to deal with that on a high level, I need to make sure that I don't keep running to the places where I fail. And then the last thing is live in community. The place where I really work these things out is when I have people around me who can pray with me, can walk me through it, and can be there as I'm struggling, all right? So where is your area? Where do you live as a functional atheist? My challenge to you this morning is wherever those areas are, where you tend to live is have a little bit of foolishness, don't let it be like dead flies that turn the perfume bad. Don't let it be like my dead mouse in my oven. Figure out what it means to believe the gospel. Let the love of Christ draw you to himself and let him transform you through the scriptures, through community, through honest evaluation of yourself. Let him change you. This is the story. Don't go out of here with a list of here's how I'm going to be better. Go out of here with an understanding that Jesus died for that, offers forgiveness, and will draw you to himself. Trust him. And so that is why we end our service with time of worship. We are going to sing and celebrate because we're going to think about Jesus because he is the solution to my folly. We're going to have a time where we collect an offering. We collect an offering, not, you know, if you're a guest, we are not asking you to give. This is not why we do this. In fact, if you're a guest, this service is our gift to you. We don't want you to give. But we do an offering because this is a place where I go, you know, God has done so much for me, and this is my way of responding and worshiping him with the things that I have. We worship, okay? And we worship because the only solution to me is Christ. That's it. I am not the solution to me. Jesus is. I turn to him. I sing about him. I celebrate him. I experience the gospel. And that's the joy of it. The band's going to come out. They're going to lead us in this time where we worship and we sing. We're going to celebrate Jesus together because he is the answer to my foolishness. I'm going to pray. We're going to sing. You'll stand with me after that. Lord, I praise you and I honor you and I thank you for the reminder from scripture this morning that we all have places where we live in this realm where I deny your existence, not in big ways. I mean, I have this mental belief, yes, you are God, you are in control, I trust you, but we all have these little areas that we just keep to ourselves and we live as functional atheists. But Lord, help us figure out this morning what that looks like, where those places are. Help us be honest with those. And this morning, help us look into the gospel, the good news of Jesus' death and resurrection, and help us be drawn to you because you're pursuing love in our life. We thank you for being so good and loving us in spite of us. And so this morning, I just ask you to speak that into us as we sing and celebrate. In your name I pray. Amen.